ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोश्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। वी हैव टू क्वेश्चन्स् बिफोर् वी स्टार्ट् अवर् रेगुलर् सेशन्। ऐ वुड् लैक् टु डील् वित् देम्। फस्ट्, इफ् आल् इस् हेपनिङ्ग् एस् इट् शुड् and happening as per divine will, when should one speak out or interfere in the business of another? Should one speak at all or leave it to divine will and karma to play themselves out? This is a very practical question. The straightforward answer is this. It is true that everything is happening by the will of God. And we must always remember, if we really mean what we say, that everything is happening by the divine will, two points we have to keep in our mind, that first, there is nothing I can do because it is divine will, and second, divine never wills anything that is painful or that is inauspicious, that is damaging to oneself. All for the best. That is the Divine Mother's will. So, with this conviction, we have to do. Let me give an example also. Once someone asks Sri Ramakrishna, if someone is suffering, and if it is God's will or that person's prarabdha, then we should not do anything. Sorry, it is not Sri Ramakrishna, it is Swami Vivekananda. Immediately he said, something so very important. He said, if it is the will of God that another person should suffer, it is the will of God that you should help that person as much as possible. Otherwise, it is pure hypocrisy, it is an escapism. So, I need not to do anything, so I need not spend any money, and I will be very selfish. That's a very wrong view. Even if we feel that someone is suffering, that understanding is right. But that understanding should bring sympathy, and sympathy should not be lip deep. It must be translating itself into some concrete action, some concrete help according to one's capacity, of course. So, this is the first point we have to remember. But the most important point we have to remember is, we go on talking, it is God's will, it is my prarabdha. How many of us, with our whole heart, really believe that it is God's will or it is my prarabdha? If I really believe, and then here also something funny is there. When I am happy, I don't see that it is God's will. It is, I worked hard, I deserved it, so God doesn't come into the equation. Only when some suffering comes, then we tend to question, why is God doing it? So, if somebody feels for the suffering of the other person, that very suffering, understanding that the other person is suffering, if it doesn't bring an appropriate response, which Jesus calls good neighbor, who is a good neighbor. I hope you know the story, but it is a wonderful story. Jesus Christ always spoke in parables. A parable is something which has got deep meaning. So here is the parable. Once a priest, a rabbi, was passing and he saw somebody unknown to him. He was suffering very much. So the man was traveling on a donkey and he saw the whole thing. And if he goes anywhere near the suffering person, he would be obliged to do something. So as if he did not see, he pretended that way and ran away from the place as fast as possible. After some time, you know, even in those days, society was divided into the touchables and untouchables, as what we call upper class and lower class, etc. So there was a low caste person, young man. He was going. He saw this suffering person and he went immediately and put him on his own donkey and brought him to the next village and lodged him in an appropriate place and tended him, nursed him, and gave some money to the innkeeper and said, "Kindly look after this person, I will not be able to stay." And then he went away. Now Jesus, having narrated this parable, he puts a question to his listeners. Now, who is a good Samaritan? Of course, the disciples were not that foolish. He said, the person who really helped, he is a good Samaritan, good neighbor, good person. And that is the lesson we have to learn. The moment we cognize someone is suffering, instantaneously, we must try to do something to help him. So here also, can we really help him? In the sense, can you do really something good to him? According to the theory of karma, it all depends upon that person's karma. If he is to be helped, if he is to be survived, and if he is to become good, healthy person or normal person, whatever, that will happen. It has nothing to do with us. We are only just instruments. Second thing is, irrespective of whatever that person becomes, we are, by doing something good to the other person, we are helping ourselves. This is called self-help. It not only brings punya. Whenever we do any action, good or evil, remember, four things happen at the same time. Four things. I will give an example. Supposing you encounter a person who is very hungry and you feel sympathy, you provide that person with food. Now four things will happen. The first thing is that person's hunger is removed. He feels satisfied. Second thing, you feel satisfied because you are able to help. Always this happens. When we help somebody and we feel satisfied. Third thing that happens is the samskara, the impression that when we see someone in need, we should be able to help as much as possible. That samskara, as many times as we do good, every time it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger until it becomes a habit. A habit is second nature. That means after some time, we do not even need to think. Just as we do not need to think and brush our teeth, it has become a habit. This is the third thing. Fourth thing that happens is, if we believe in our scripture, every good karma, immediately it brings some punya, and that will be fructifying in future. So, it is, even though everything is God's will, but we do not know. We are only what is called repeating it, copying it, plagiarizing it from the scriptures without even 100% believing in it. So, we should not keep quiet. Of course, it depends upon the situation. If somebody is so belligerent that I don't need your advice, keep quiet. But if it is someone whom you love and you think you are doing something can help, do something without expecting anything. And at the same time, you also have to be detached in a way. If they take your advice, that's fine. If they do not expect thankfulness, that way you will be spared regret, anger, frustration, hatred, and etc. because that person did not express. So this is the answer. Try to do, if the other person, whether he is willing to accept it or not, but if it is absolutely belligerent, leave it. But if it is possible, give impartially, then let God take over whatever happens to it. That is the first question. Second, what is the most effective oil to apply to one's hands before breaking open the jackfruit? Of course, this is a teaching of Sri Ramakrishna. Jackfruit has a sticky substance. As soon as you cut it, immediately your hand, if you are touching with a hand, I would say, why don't you use some gloves? Then the labor of washing of the oil later on also, that labor can be avoided. That's what I feel. Anyway, the point is, oil is the right thing before touching anything sticky, because sticky things cannot stick to oil, etc. So any oil will do. But the antarartha is here, that is, you do what you want to do. Just now, as for the first question, if someone is open, or it is your duty towards your children or known people, loved people, but many of them are like this jackfruit, their very sticky substance comes and it is very hard for us to get rid of it. So you put on the oil of detachment. That's what Sri Ramakrishna really means. Okay, now we will go to our regular class. What are we talking in our last class? I hope all of you remember, it's your duty as a good listener at least to get back to it and note down or recollect important points, because scriptures need to be not heard once but billions of times until the essence sticks into our mind and reminds us when we are doing something unspiritual, we should not do it, and when we are lazy to do something spiritual, it should help us to move forward. So here we are talking about Swami Vivekananda has taken some of these selected duties of every householder. But by implication, if a householder has a duties, a brahmachari also has duties, a vanaprastha, a retired person has duties, which I will deal in future, in the future, and a sannyasin has his own duties. So what is the duty of a vanaprasthi in brief? That he should try to slowly withdraw from all worldly duties and increase his spiritual duties. And if he has done his householder duties properly, then he should try to become more detached, of course, without losing the love towards his family, his children, grandchildren, etc. We have so many duties, which we will discuss right now in a few minutes' time. But a retired person's main duty is not to go on poking his nose or poking his fingers into what doesn't concern. I explained earlier that supposing somebody has sufficient income to live a simple life, then if he does anything worldly, Sri Ramakrishna hates him. Not really, I'm just putting it in human language. That means God doesn't like a person. God wants us to go to him as quickly as possible. Just as our mother or a grandmother is waiting for us to finish the play. As soon as the play is over, we have to run into the hands of our grandma or mother, who will carry it. They are waiting for us. So God is even more eagerly waiting for us to turn our mind towards him and to try to move towards him, to be nearer to him. Because the love of all parents together is combined, condensed, and that is what God is. Just as you cannot do without seeing your children, God even more eagerly is waiting for us. So, to withdraw our mind from unnecessary things and focus on necessary things, that is the primary duty of a vanaprastha. And many sannyasins nowadays, in the name of karma yoga, especially of Swami Vivekananda, and of course Sri Ramakrishna has always advocated a balance, and what Swami Vivekananda preached was only Sri Ramakrishna. Why did Swami Vivekananda put so much of emphasis on karma? Many places he goes into ecstasy saying, work, work, work. Why? Because at his time, our country was deeply immersed in tamas, and that is why he wanted to awaken us. Awakening means we have to be alert, we have to be active. And that was the reason. But I doubt whether he meant whole life let us do karma yoga. But even somebody says that I am doing karma yoga, I am talking about real karma yoga, that means the man's 99% of his mind is, I want to go to God, and my karma is the instrument which will take me to God. If that is not the case, 99% mind on karma and 1% on God, if at all, that is self-pure self-deception. It is not really karma yoga, much less it is karma bhoga. It is karma roga, what Eric Fromm had coined, workaholism. Work itself becomes a venue of escape for all of us. So, what about brahmacharis? They have tremendous duties, especially when a brahmachari is completing his studies and he has completed, is about to go home, what we call convocation or valedictory function. The guru calls all his disciples and he delivers a valedictory address, which we find, and rarely we find it in 99% of the scriptures. And in the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the very first chapter called Shikshavalli, 11th Anuvaka, 11th section, first chapter, 11th section, gives more than 10 beautiful commandments. And we have heard it, we can recollect when I tell a few of them. Satyam vada, dharmam chara, svadhyayan ma pramadaha, matru pitru karyabhyam, na pramaditavyam, matru devo bhava, pitru devo bhava, acharya devo bhava, atidhi devo bhava, bhutyaina pramaditavyam, shriyadeyam, hriyadeyam, bhiyadeyam, samvidadeyam. Most marvelous commandments for every youth who is stepping into the responsibility of a householder's life. But here, Swami Vivekananda is giving us this beautiful, in brief, duties that we have been talking about, Swami Vivekananda's exposition, which he had taken from Mahanirvana Tantra, that a householder, a man's duty, husband's duty to his wife. But I have to emphasize here, not only husband's duty. Before I go into it, I would like to tell you something, tell us something. Sri Ramakrishna, millions today consider him as an incarnation of God. The purpose of an avatara is upholding dharma to re-establish the balance, dharma. Dharma means right way of living. So as somebody has said so beautifully, life is a game, and every game has rules and regulations. If there are no rules, regulations, a game becomes a ruffian's acting. It is not a game any longer. A game must be enjoyable, but it must be skillfully followed through its rules, regulations, etc. So what Hinduism is expounding, the duties of the students, or the householders, or the retired people, and the all-renouncing monks, they are all the rules, the laws of the game, how to play. And if we play well, we move what we call, there is a holy game. I call it a very holy game. And we all know about that. It is consisting of 18 holes. That's why I call it holy game. So that is advancing from one hole to the another hole, from a less holiness to more holiness. This is the purpose of life, to manifest our potential divinity slowly by playing the game of life, so that we can conquer nature, external as well as internal, means control the mind, gain more of the control over our body and mind. And this can be done either through work or worship or psychic control or to intellect by one or more, usually many, all of them combined together. So here are the is a duty. Swami Vivekananda was a rishi. Now, interesting point is, Swami Vivekananda, in his past incarnation, along with other rishis, have promulgated, formulated these rules and regulations according to the stage of one's life, according to the caste one belongs. The word caste should not bring negative meanings into our mind. It simply means a particular state of consciousness. Lowest state, Shudra. Little higher state, Vaishya. And much better state, Kshatriya. And pure Sattvika, play of Sattva, is called a Brahmana. That's why it is said, Brahma Janati iti Brahmana. We discussed these points also earlier. And then in every caste person's life, there is a childhood, there is a youth, then there is a advanced age, and then towards the end, when a person is complete, almost helpless, we say old age. But spiritually put, Brahmacharya Ashrama, Grihastha Ashrama, Vanaprastha Ashrama, and Sannyasa Ashrama. So Swami Vivekananda was a rishi in his past birth. And these rishis promulgated that they were great students of life. They experimented with life and they squeezed the very essence of life. And what they understood, as I mentioned many, many times, Swami Vivekananda put in three sentences. Each soul is potentially divine. You, me, everybody, none other than that divine mother. We have come from the mother. She is the divine mother. So we are also divine. But at this moment, we are not aware of it. So the goal of life is slowly to understand we are not body, we are not mind, but we are something which enlivens, vitalizes, directs, controls, and plays that pure consciousness, that is to manifest that divinity through either Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga, by one. Usually nobody practices only one. Because the mind cannot be divided. The moment we pull in one faculty, all the other faculties also rush in there. So take hold of the faculties, and that is how aptitude will come. And then slowly, progress means manifest divinity, means less selfishness, more love, more concentration, more mind control, and more appreciation of our relationship with God. This is called traveling from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. That's what we need to understand. So before we go further, every avatar demonstrates to humanity, means to all of us, through his life, this Varnashrama Dharma, whether you examine the life of Buddha, Rama, Krishna, Jesus, or any of the incarnations, they practically demonstrate. Why do they demonstrate? For two reasons. One reason is, it is not that they are there only to demonstrate. It is their nature. Because they are wise people, they have body and mind, that is called birth. And so therefore, they will naturally behave towards their parents, towards their brothers, sisters, wives, etc., etc., country, people and friends, enemies, and any type of situations, good or not so good. How we can squeeze the highest profit from life. So these rishis themselves have experimented, thought about it, and experimented, and they found out this is the way to move forward from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. And that is what Swami Vivekananda in this incarnation, remember, he was one of the Saptarshis, if we have to believe in Sri Ramakrishna. Here I would like to insert a word about this faith. We think we are all really rational people. Now, there is a conflict sometimes between faith and reason. Which comes first? According to modern thinkers, reason comes first and faith comes later on. And according to Hinduism or every religion, faith comes first and reason comes second. Naturally, the question that comes is, what is the relationship between faith and reason? There's a wonderful books have been written on this subject. One of the best books I have come across is Reason and Revelation by K. Sachidananda Murthy, a professor in our Visakhapatnam, in those days it is called Voltaire University. Reason and Revelation. Which is, can we do without revelation? Can we do without reason? If both are needed, then which comes first, reason or revelation? And believe me, all the modern Western philosophy is based upon reason. And that is not, that helps only in the worldly matters where we already encounter certain facts as a matter of experience. But then, anything beyond the ken of the five sense organs, such as whether there is life after, whether there are other worlds other than what we know here, and whether God exists, and whether we have past births or future births, these questions can never be solved, can never be obtained through the five sense organs, because whatever five sense organs, their limit is only very, very small, and they can only reveal in the physical world. They can never know whether we had past birth, future birth. That's why the Western psychology has declared every baby is born with a blank slate, tabula rasa they call it. And Western psychology is mostly based upon this foolish fact, not accepting there is something much deeper, goes beyond what we know. Just now a baby is born, I would say, supposing there are 100 babies in a maternity ward and they are all born practically at the same time in one day, they all react differently to certain phenomena. This has been experimented. For example, somebody had made loud banging sounds. Some babies who are sleeping, and most of the time the babies are asleep only, the babies woke up with a start, some started crying, some just opened the eyes, blinked a little, and immediately went back to sleep. And some babies started laughing. And of course, Who can explain why these different babies react so differently? Is it something with they're all born with tabula rasa and born in the on the same day practically, just a few hours difference, and they were all kept in that nursery, and the climate, environment, everything is practically same. Why these diametrically opposed reactions come in them? They can never explain. So is it necessary that we have to accept this? Yes, because if someone is abnormal and a psychologist wants to help that person, if we do not accept that the differences come because of some unknown life led in the past, if we do not accept it, the cure will never be complete. There may be something. That's why once I asked a Canadian psychiatrist, one of our Indian Bengali devotees, what's your experience? You must have counseled and prescribed medicine for thousands of people because so many years you have been practicing. He was an old man when I met him. Then he said that the outcome, Swami, he said, the outcome, if you are watching me, you can watch me like that. Like that he draw a big zero. The outcome is this. But the income, so I learned a great lesson at that time there. Now, what am I talking about? That there are things beyond the ken of the five sense organs and Indian psychology. And what do I mean by that? Patanjali Yoga Shastra is Indian depth psychology. Accepts all these past janma, future janma, everything. And that is why it is much, much more effective than anything. Some of you might have heard about a gentleman in the West called, what is his name? I forgot just now. Casey, I think. And he has written a book, Many Mansions. He accepted so many past lives. Whenever somebody came with some remedy, immediately he used to go back in his own consciousness. 5,000 years back, you did this evil, this wrong thing, and that is why you have been, I got the name now, Edgar Casey. Edgar Casey. So, 5,000 years back, you did this wrong, and in this birth you are suffering because as an effect of that what you have done. And so, what is the remedy? It is not medication, it is not mantra tantra, that you correct your behavior, you develop good samskaras, you help other people, you sacrifice your selfishness and become spiritual in essence. If you become spiritual, that is the only remedy. And every Indian school of philosophy says, the only way to escape the evils of life is to become spiritual. That is what is called moksha, parama purusharthah. Anyway, all this long introduction I am giving because these duties are very important. Why? Because it is by discharging our duties that we travel, we progress from a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. And many times we forget these duties. That's why God incarnates as a human being and upholds. Not only he himself practices in his own life, but he will also inspire others to practice them. That is where I'll give a few examples, because examples, every example is like a picture. A picture is equivalent to 1,000 words. There is a saying like that in English. Sri Ramakrishna, even as a baby, was extraordinarily devoted to his parents. Not to speak of Satyam, he was fearless, courageous, but he was extraordinarily devoted. If mother says something, that is absolutely he will believe. Even if she happens to tell something unreasonable, but he will accept it. Of course, he will think about it. So, then his father, he keenly observed his father's life, and he said, "My father never deviated from devotion to God. He had tremendous faith in God, and he never deviated from following the path of truthfulness, satyam vada, dharmam chara, swadhyayanma pramadaha, matru pitru karyabhyam, na pramaditavyam, matru devo bhava, pitru devo bhava, acharya devo bhava, atithi devo bhava." As a brahmana, Sudhiram was an embodiment of all these special virtues dictated as a householder's duties, and some of them we discussed. And Sri Ramakrishna's love for his mother knew no bounds. Of course, his father passed away very early. Then he was equally devoted to his eldest brother Ramkumar and Rameshwar. But his mother lived for a long time, even after realization of God. That's important point to keep in mind. Chandramani Devi started living at Nahabad, and every day Sri Ramakrishna, mind you, he was a Brahma Vittamaha, the greatest knower of Brahman. Even if you do not accept him as an incarnation of God, he would go to his mother and make sastanga pranams, touching her lotus feet. Only when she puts her hand on his head, he will get up. And then his devotion knew no bounds. So, I will tell you now one incident. You may be thinking, what is the Swami talking about? He is supposed to talk about the gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, and he is bringing in all these things. Don't mind, this is what the gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is about. It is like Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, as you know, great Sridhar Acharya has written an elaborate commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam itself consists of more than 24,000 slokas, I think, and even then they get commentator, many commentators were there, and one of them was this Sridhar Acharya, most marvelous commentator. So, if this gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is authenticated by the life of Sri Ramakrishna, and that is why I am taking all these examples. So, what happened was, Sri Ramakrishna once was taken on a pilgrimage to Varanasi, Devaghar, Varanasi, and then finally to Vrindavan. At Vrindavan, Sri Ramakrishna met one of the extraordinary devotees, a woman called Ganga Mai. And Sri Ramakrishna understood this lady had attained the highest spiritual consciousness. He used to compare her with Radha. And as soon as that lady saw Sri Ramakrishna, she started calling Sri Ramakrishna, "My Radha, my Dulal." And then she was extraordinarily devoted. Sri Ramakrishna, remember, he will be attracted only to spiritual people. It's a very peculiar thing. Just as a person with desires will be attracted towards worldly things, Sri Ramakrishna's whole personality is an embodiment of condensed spirituality. So he will be attracted, and he will attract only spiritual people. Worldly people will not be attracted to him, neither he will be attracted towards worldly people. And some of these spiritual people that came into contact with him were having great insight. This Gangamayi was one of them. As soon as she saw him, she recognized, "This is my Radhu, my Dulal. And Sri Ramakrishna was so attached, he almost decided that to live with Ganga Mai. She had a small cottage, so they made plans. Your cot will be that side, my cot will be this side, and we will be living together. Of course, Hridu was there with him, and if without Sri Ramakrishna, Hridu may not be able to retain his job. So he had his own personal motive. But he loved also his uncle. So the day came for them to depart. And then Hridu was trying to pull Sri Ramakrishna by his hand. Ganga Mai caught hold of another hand of Sri Ramakrishna. Ganga Mai was pulling him towards him. And Hridu was pulling Sri Ramakrishna towards himself. And then Sri Ramakrishna decided to live there almost. He could have done that. Then he was narrating, he was recollecting, reminiscing. Suddenly I remembered, my old mother is there. If I do not go and serve her, all my spirituality will go to dogs. I will not be able to stay. Even though earlier he did not think about it, as soon as mother's thought came into his mind, instantaneously he shook off Ganga Mai's hand and said, no, I must return back. My old mother is there. So long as I am alive, it is my duty to look after. Then he came back. Now what is the important point? Let us remember, by that time this event happened, Sri Ramakrishna was a monk. Usually a sannyasin, according to Hindu tradition, has absolutely no attachments, no ties, no bondage towards his so-called Purvashrama, former family, mother, father, wife, if at all he is married, children and friends, relatives, race, religion, everything he must give what we call Tilanjali. In Shraddha, when he does Shraddha, every sannyasi, by the way, he must perform his own Shraddha. The reason was that he will not be having anybody after renunciation, after becoming a monk, to perform him. Therefore, he himself performs to all his ancestors, and he does it to himself also. This no householder is allowed to do, only sannyasins are allowed to do it. What does it mean? It means, once a person becomes a sannyasi, for all practical purposes, he is like a ghost, like a bhuta, like a dead person. Of course, you have to understand what is a dead person. That means he will not have anything to do with the world. He will be totally detached, like a stranger. That is called condition of a dead person. Beautiful description is given in Jivan Mukti Viveka. We get, who is a dead person? A dead person is one, even when most delicious, tasty food is brought near his tongue, he feels it is virulent poison. If a most beautiful woman comes near him, he will consider her as a decomposing dead body and emitting foul smell. Even if he is offered the whole world, he will consider that a person is beating him with thorns, thorn and whip. So a person who feels this kind of idea about the world, even the best of the world, like a dead body, as you go on pouring milk, go on giving rasagullas, or go on draping that person with golden saris, golden cloths, it will only spoil these things, but it will not be aware of it. So even though aware, but regards just as worthless things, dirty things, things one should run away from, such a mentality is called the mentality of a dead body. And every monk is supposed to be that. Ramakrishna describes about a monk who is running after a woman, name, fame, money, etc. It is like spitting out one sputum and again picking it out and then swallowing it. These are horrible words, but I am telling. But even though sannyasin is not supposed to have any attachment, then he considers his father and mother. Sri Ramakrishna is upholding. Why? But not only he was having it, this is the guideline for all future monks. Just because you are a monk, it is no reason for you to neglect your family, especially if parents are suffering. About others, yes, you can afford to treat them as equal to anybody else, but mother and father are very, very special persons. If a monk is supposed to treat one's parents this way, does it need to repeat how a householder should consider his mother and father? So this is to set an example for all of us. Then Sri Ramakrishna returned home. Until his mother died, Sri Ramakrishna was looking after every day he will go. Towards the end of her life, this Chandramani Devi, that was the name of Sri Ramakrishna's mother, developed a kind of abnormality. Her memory has gone, so she was not eating food. There was a funny incident near Dakshineswar, on the other side of the, towards the northern side of the Dakshineswar temple. There was a jute mill, and from Monday to Saturday afternoon, workers will come. In those days, half Saturday also was a working day. So workers used to be at 8 o'clock, the siren will go. That is, you must start work. And then at about 12 o'clock or so, another siren will go. That is for lunch break. After, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour, another siren will go. That means you must have finished your lunch and come back and join. Again in the evening, another time the siren will go. That is, you have completed your time and now you are free to return home. Every day this was going on. This Chandramani Devi developed a very peculiar idea that siren sound sounded like the blowing of a conch. So she connected it that, you know, she was able to see, she was in Vaikuntha, and at about 12:30 or so, this the Lord will be given his food, naivedya, anna bhoga. And before that, to announce that event, this conch will be blown. And once Narayana finishes eating, then another time the conch will be blown, they are telling everybody, now you are free, all devotees, you can also eat your own food, because the Lord had finished. First the Lord has to finish. So from Monday to Friday, things go on well. And at about, after this siren goes at 1 o'clock or so, then Chandramani Devi will eat a small quantity of food. But on Saturday, so there is only once the conch will be blown at 12:30 or 1 o'clock. That is signaling now your working period is over. After that, there would be no siren. Sunday, of course, complete holiday. So on those days, it became extremely difficult for anybody to feed the old lady. Because she says, on Saturdays, Narayana had not finished eating. Until he finishes eating, I will not be able to eat. Look at the devotion even in this abnormality. She is only thinking of Narayana. She is only thinking of Vaikuntha. Blessed be any person who can think like that. So, there was this, Hriday was there, and he wanted to deceive his so-called grandma. Then he made a small pipe out of some bamboos, and he used to be there outside her room and blow this pipe. And then come inside and said, Grandma, the siren is, Lord has finished eating. But she was even in, she was sane, even in those moments, and say, no, 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 you made up one small blowpipe and you are blowing. It is not the same sound like the Vaikuntha sound. There is a method even in madness also. So those days, Ramakrishna will go, and remember he was a supreme actor. So he will sit there and then he will slowly start his childhood days. And his poor mother used to forget everything, it is Saturday, because such was the mesmerizing power of Sri Ramakrishna's play acting. And then slowly, slowly, he will make her forget this Saturday, the siren has not blown, and feed her something. Sometimes he was successful, a few times he was not successful, but something used to go into her stomach. So that is how Saturday, Sunday was there, every day. And then at night also he will go and then see that mother is fed properly. Then he will massage her feet so that she will be able to, and go all the time gone to recollecting so many incidents that happened which she could remember, and he will lull her into sleep and make one more sashtang pranam and come back. Until the lady passed away, he did this. I cannot describe further how wonderful devotion he had. Then what happened? A day had come and everybody understood this, his mother was about to die. Then there is a belief in West Bengal that because Ganga flows there, they will take the body into the Ganga and put the feet of the person in the Ganga. The belief is, if one gives up one's prana by touching this holy Ganga, all the sins will be removed by this Ganga and the person will have a very higher, next birth will be higher life. So Sri Ramakrishna was a believer in all those things. Remember, God realization and these beliefs, they are not opposite to each other. So Sri Ramakrishna, with the help of Hriday and others, took her body and then saw that her feet were kept in the Ganga until she breathed her last. He was repeating the name and making her hear the name of God, and that is how he helped his mother to do. By this example, Sri Ramakrishna was also showing to other people, these are not superstitious beliefs. If you want your own good, you must also do it. Of course, if Ganga is not there, it is possible to do it in other rivers. But if it is not possible, what should we do? Keep always a bottle of Ganga water. You get it very easily. And sprinkle some Ganges water and put some flowers and repeating the name of God, whether it is mother, father or some elderly relative. That is how we can help them. Oh, some tulsi, etc., some bilwa, etc., we can do that one. So this is how it is. What happened? After the funeral was over, Ramakrishna wanted to do shraddha to her, tarpana to her. So, as a sannyasi, one is not allowed to do tarpana. And therefore, he had to do it. What he can do? He can go into the Ganga, take some water, and then say some prayers, and then on behalf of the dead person, he could offer it. So Sri Ramakrishna was re-establishing dharma through emphasizing all these traditional rituals which we are supposed to do. They must be done. They have tremendous meaning. They are highly effective. And this is the only way for one to progress in spiritual life or even in material life, I will say. I will talk about it when the time comes. Now, Ramakrishna went into the Ganga. He took water. You know what happened? All his fingers were stiffly standing, completely separate from each other finger. That means the ability to hold water has disappeared from Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna, of course, noticed it. He started weeping. Oh, Maha, I want to offer prayers to you, but my mother is not allowing even to offer you some water as a sannyasi. Then, like a small child, he ran to the manager. And one Bholanath was there. I think he was a bit learned person. Some scriptures he had studied. He knew quite a lot of things. He asked, why is it I was unable to offer even water to my own mother? Then Bholanath has explained. You see, a person who has realized God, his hands become galita hasta. Galita means he won't be able to accumulate anything, whether it is money or food or water or any liquid or anything. Just as from a broken vessel, water or anything will flow out, will not stay there. In a similar manner, a true sannyasin's hands also will become like that. Sri Ramakrishna said, I wept and then said, O mother, if my weeping is any good, may you attain the highest state of liberation. So, these are some of the examples I have given you. Why? Because it is the householder's duty to honor his parents? And what about his brothers and sisters and poor people towards temples, towards rituals, towards the guru, towards the scriptures? There are so many obligations are there. They are not innumerable, but they are all related as an integral sadhana so that we can progress in spiritual life. So about these things in our future class, I am going to talk about it. Through this, what we need to understand is how a God, when he is born as an incarnation, is trying to establish this dharma. And that is why, as part of the spreading of the message of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, in his Karma Yoga, he brings out all these things, because we are also Karma Yogins, or we are supposed to become Karma Yogins. So these duties towards the husband, towards the wife, towards the children, towards the parents, towards the guru, towards the neighbors, towards the poor, towards the rich, towards friends, towards enemies, towards not only one's religion, towards other religions, other countries, other people, not only people, but towards other creatures and towards the whole environment, whether it is non-living like mountains, rivers, etc. Everything, these great incarnations, they set a tremendous example to all of us. We will discuss further these things when the occasion comes from our next class onwards. Om Jananeem Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Pahada Padme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Moho. May the Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti. Until next class.